Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, prisoner advocate and host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we have on with us our guest, Gracie Goodell, and Gracie will be discussing the negative effects solitary confinement has had on her husband and the pain and suffering they both have had to endure as a result. She'll also be talking about the corruption in the penal system. There is a serious need for the media and independent committees to be established by political leaders in order to oversee the prisons, to prevent the abuses, deprivations, provocations, medical and psychological neglect that are consistently occurring in prisons across the country. We thank you for coming on the show, Gracie. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Even more importantly, how is your husband doing now?
He's hanging in there. He's hanging in there. He knows that we are doing everything possible for his story to get out, not only his, but stories from other inmates that he was able to meet while he was in solitary confinement.
I'd like to maybe update the audience a little. Can you tell a little bit about what's happening with your husband? You know, what's been going on?
Okay, so back in October of 2018, there was some type of riot in the prison that he was in. During the visiting hours, something had happened, and the CO started separating the inmates from some of the visitors. Unfortunately, my husband was one of them. The CO didn't tell me what was going on. They just told me that my husband's visit was terminated. They did hold us for some questioning a couple of hours later, but I didn't know what was going on. The CO, the warden, didn't want to let us know exactly the reason they terminated our visit. 48 hours later, I received a call from the prison stating that my husband was being transferred to solitary confinement. So I was asking questions, why, what happened. They didn't answer me. That weekend I was able to make my appointment to go see him behind the glass. And he had told me that they put him in solitary confinement with no reason. They didn't give him a write-up. They just said that they're doing an investigation regarding an incident that happened. So my husband didn't know anything, and that they were keeping him in a room where the toilet wasn't working. So he was actually in a room filled with feces. They didn't give him a blanket. They were just, you know, it was a horrific experience for him. They didn't feed him. So I immediately, once I left visiting, I contacted the ombudsman. I tried contacting the prison. Nobody responded back to me. So at that point, we had to start writing letters back and forth so I can get more information. So every time I would go visit him, he would tell me some horrific stories. But, you know, everything that led for him to be in solitary confinement, I mean, he didn't have a write-up. There was no reason. He didn't go to committee. They were just keeping him back there. And, you know, he did have some health issues at that time, and they weren't allowing him to go seek medical treatment. So I kept complaining. I kept writing letters to the warden. I kept trying to contact the his counselor, and the counselor was giving me the runaround. So it was already 30 days that he was in solitary confinement. And when I saw him, he just looked a mess. And he told me that the day before visiting that they call him the Gooner Squad, I guess the people who do the investigations, pulled him to the side and basically said, you know, we heard this, you know, we'll cut a deal with you if you agree to, you know, to say this, you know. So basically trying to put words in his mouth. And my husband wasn't going to give in to that. So because of that, they locked him back up in solitary confinement.
I'd like to say one, Gracie, before you go on. I want the audience to know this is not an isolated incident. I know when they put prisoners in solitary confinement or they put them on restrictive blocks for no reason at all, and families call politicians or call other places to get help, when they call into the prisons, they are told that they cannot say anything because there's an investigation going on. Yet there is no investigation. This is an excuse that's used by the prison officials and staff all the time, and it's not only in one state, it's all over the states. So I just want to get that clear, Gracie, so that they know what's going on with your husband right now is happening to other prisoners. And again, the DOC, the only way that they can justify the inappropriate actions that they themselves are doing is to state that there's an investigation going on. This is an ongoing thing. I just wanted to bring that out. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but go on, Gracie.
No, that's completely fine. they obviously record when we're talking, and so it just happened to be that finally my husband was telling me exactly what was going on back there, how they were being treated, how a day before I went to go see my husband, they pulled him to the side and they basically wanted to put words in his mouth. That evening there were two inmates that committed suicide in front of my husband, and the COs were laughing about it, did nothing, basically turned to all the other inmates and said, "You didn't see anything," So a lot of inmates in there are afraid, or they're afraid to speak up because there are consequences, And so my husband basically said, we can't be afraid of the system. We need to speak up. So he told me, get in contact with as many people, let them know my story. Well, Leona, it just so happens that two weeks after all this was going on, I went to go see my husband. Everything was fine. I went in through the visiting process. They checked me in. I went to go sit down, and this is behind the glass. Okay, there's no contact. I went to sit down. I'm waiting for my husband, and 45 minutes later, a lieutenant came and told me I needed to go to the front because they needed to ask me some questions. So, I agreed. I went to the front. And there were four COs in there, and they told me that in order for me to be able to continue to see my husband, I need to agree to a strip search. So I asked them under what grounds, and they would not answer me. So they, so I repeated again, if I do not agree, are my visits terminated? And they said indefinitely. So I had a choice to make for them to either to give them the power to cut the contact between my husband and I, or for me to just do a quick, strip search, be humiliated, but stand my ground, And I agreed to the strip search. I had nothing to hide, and I made sure I got all the names of the COs that were there. And, they were laughing. They were giving me a hard time. And they told me that they thought that I was going to smuggle in marijuana to my husband. Well, first of all, he's behind the glass. Second of all, you're going to wait 45 minutes till I've been processed. I mean, this was just a bully tactic to try to keep any type of communication between my husband and I, and it didn't work.
I would like to ask the audience, and I am asking the audience, please get this information from Gracie, the inmate's name, her husband's name, get this information. Support her and go to the media. Please go to the media. And Gracie, please post all the media outlets in the state, if you can, at least the links to those media outlets where people can actually contact them. Because this is getting out of control, and people are having to, families and members are having to go into the prisons to meet with their loved ones. Half the time they don't know what to expect when they get there. They're being told to do these things. It's not right, and it should be reported. I'm sorry the media is not aware of this, and if they are, they're not doing anything about it. So, Gracie, before the end of this show, please give all the information about your husband, where they can call the media or just politicians that they can call in that state.
Okay. I will do. I know for a fact Governor
and posted
Newsom
as well on Facebook, posted on the prisoner advocacy sites, posted on my site, posted on the End Life Without Parole site, posted on the letter writing campaign site, post it wherever you can. This is going to stop. And I'm sorry.
I
get upset when I hear these things too.
No, I understand, but you know, I think I'm strong enough to have gone through this, and it shed a light on, you know, really what goes on. Because when I was just visiting my husband, it was just me visiting. You know, I really didn't focus on actually what went on after visits or before visits or how they really treat him. And then when he was moved to solitary confinement, it just opened up, you know, new doors. And to be honest, you know, a lot of inmates and inmates' families are afraid to speak up or to be a voice because the system is basically a bully. They bully them, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, that quid pro quo, you know, you give me some of this and I'll probably do this for you. You know, that goes on in the system, you know, and it's unjust. And, you know, whatever it takes to be a voice, you know, my husband and I, we, you know, communicate through letters now, and when he gets the chance, he'll try and call me. And our main goal now is to get this out so other people know what's going on and not to be afraid to be that voice, that there's other people out there, you know, going through this, and that, you know, there is a support system. Unfortunately, you know, there's no policing of the system, and, you know, they feel they can do whatever they want and get away with it, and that needs to change. You know, I mean, I looked it up. There's an estimated 80,000 to 100,000 inmates that are currently in solitary confinement. And, you know, it's sad because the system is supposed to, you know, help, you know, inmates, you know, prepare them for the release or, you know, and they don't do that. They intend to break them instead. And it's just an unjust system. You know,
it's what
until
they call
this day,
psychological torture. That's what it is. It's psychological torture, and nowadays it's almost like the beatings are not the beatings are not like they used to be. There's still beatings out there in the penal system, but they play with the mind. They do as much as they can to destroy the mind and the family members. They try to discourage them from going to visit their loved ones. They're talking media videos now. They're talking about all these things to separate the families. As you say, these things, something needs to be done about it. And what you went through, you should not have had to go through. No one should have to go through strip searches, especially when they say the guards are the ones that are bringing the drugs in because they're making extra money on the side doing these things. And then they blame it on the family members because they want the media and everyone in the free world, so-called free world, to believe that so that they will be harsher on crime. That's what it is. But you should not have had to go through that.
Oh, and now that I'm learning, you know, I've met a few loved ones that have to go through the same thing. Still, you know, their husband or brothers or sons, you know, are in solitary confinement and don't know the reason why. They haven't gone to committee or they haven't gotten a write-up, you know, stating why they're in there for, you know, and they don't give them a time of when they can get out, you know. So it's really, you know, it's unfair. And it's very sad. You know, it got to the point where I had to stop bringing my boys there because every time we went there, they were treated poorly. And, you know, they would turn around and say, you know, Mom, why are we going through this? We're just going to go visit Dad. You know, why are they questioning me? Or why are they looking at me like this? Or why are they making us sit this way? And, you know, it's torture, you know, and they do that to the families because they know it's going to get to the inmates. And that's more mental torture for them, you know.
Children grow up with so much anger. Children grow up when they have their fathers or their loved ones inside, and they're growing up having to fear law and fear the prison, the penal system overseers, because they're seeing it right from the childhood, right from the adolescent ages, right from their youth. These things are are misleading to our young people today, too. To have to see their father in prison is one thing. To have to see the way the prison staff treat them, as a result, treat the loved ones of those incarcerated men and women. It just needs to stop. And they do have to have an oversight. They should form these committees, these independent committees, to go in the prisons randomly, without notice, without notification, and meet with some of these prisoners just randomly to find out what's going on. And I also feel really upset with these psychologists, psychiatrists out in the communities that know about these things going on. They should be working with the families. They should be working with the politicians to make changes, because they know the psychological effects of solitary confinement. They know the psychological effects of division of family members, prevention of family members. They know the psychological tortures that are going on in the prisons. In this country, in America, it's worse than any other country. And this is for psychologists not to be involved, for them, the penal system hires their own providers to come in, their own contracted providers, where they have the say over what the providers are saying. And this happens all the time. They need to have these independent committees going into these prisons. And they need to have these colleges, these Harvard and Yale and Mass General and all these hospitals throughout the country, where they can go in and they can do some medical work without having to have a contract with the Department of Corrections across this country.
Mm-hmm.
These politicians, they need to do more than they're doing. They don't realize the power that they have, what they can do. They could go into these prisons. They can see. They can meet with prisoners. These politicians are not any better sometimes than the penal system themselves. And lawyers, ACLU, you know, Amnesty International, the Human Rights Coalitions, all these people need to go into these prisons. They know. It's like torture chambers. These are things that they need to go in and investigate. They need to see what they need to see for themselves, not talking to the staff. They need to talk to the individuals that are incarcerated going through these things. They just need to do something about it. They need to do something about it.
I know we have a new governor, Governor Gavin Newsom. From what I've been following with him, he is trying to make some changes. But for those who would like to reach out, his name is Governor Gavin Newsom, and his phone number is area code 916-445-2841. If any of you would like to reach out and just, you know, give him some words for him, you know, to let him know exactly what's going on in this corrupt system. Maybe he can, you know, help us. It's ridiculous. You know, there are so many people that are incarcerated that really don't need to be incarcerated. And it's very sad. It just seems that sometimes when we try to take a step forward, something happens and we get pushed back. But, you know, my advice to each and every one of you out there who is going through this, who has a loved one incarcerated or has been incarcerated, you know, don't give up. There are people out there supporting you, people out there who are willing to be your voice. And, you know, one thing that got me and my husband through was that we would read Psalms 35 daily. And those of you who are familiar with Psalms, you know, it basically talks about, you know, the unjust and just, you know, keep the faith in God and He will see you through. So, and that's what we're doing. Every day we're keeping the faith that change is coming and that our loved ones will be coming home and that our loved ones will be safe. And we just, you know, pray that God puts it in DCO's hearts to just start treating our loved ones like actual human beings and not torture them. They don't deserve that type of treatment.
Now, I know that we have someone else on the show with us listening in. Would the person please state your name and if you have anything to say? silent listener. Okay. Okay. So what I want to say, you just quoted a scripture, Gracie, and I'm glad you did that, because one of the scriptures that I think of all the time is in 1 John chapter 4, verse 20. And I'll repeat it again because I say it all the time, that anyone that says they love God whom they cannot see yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. So we know that if we have these Christians out in the communities, pastors, priests, wherever they may be, elders, apostles, wherever they may be, if they're not out there trying to help the captives, then something is wrong there too, because they can actually go in as well and they can actually talk to the prisoners. There are so many, in this day and age, there are so many addictions throughout the country, epidemics. There is an epidemic of mental illnesses across the country, and they're throwing these people in prisons instead of getting them in established facilities where they can actually get the help that they truly need. They're making them worse so that when they come out, there's more fear than when they go in. People that have been in for a long time deserve a second chance because they have paid their dues. And they need to be able to be forgiven at some point in time, especially by people who claim to be Christians. Help. People are out there claiming to be advocates. Advocates should be actually helping all people that are in need, not certain ones. The American Civil Liberties Union needs to be going in and checking these things out. They're working with the immigrants, which is good, but that's where the money is and that's where they stay. So they need to also look at the people that are in the prisons being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, and all these other things that are going on in the prisons. Again, when they put them in solitary confinement or on restrictive blocks for no reason at all, they're saying that there's an investigation going on. There cannot be an investigation going on every single time with all of these people across the country when they are suffering and their family members are suffering. So, again, we need to push for the media to go in. We need to push for the ACLU to go in. We need to push for the human rights coalitions to go in. We need to push for all these law-abiding citizens to make a voice for these prisoners. Make the calls to the media. Make the calls to CNN News. Make the calls to Fox News and all these other stations. Insist, demand that they go in. Demand that they start looking at these prisoners as human beings and not as animals as they are made to feel like in the prisons. Get them out of solitary confinement. And lawyers, instead of taking the money from people and not doing anything, use some of that money to help these people that are in prison. It's frustrating. It's so frustrating because we know that every voice counts. We know that success is in numbers. And if we have all these people in all these advocacy groups across the country, we have thousands and thousands of them. And yet no one is making that voice except for their own loved ones. We need to fight it on a national level. We need to fight it on a state level. And we need to do it not just for one in solitary confinement, but as you say, Gracie, for all of those in solitary confinement, because it's a torture. It's a psychological torture that's going to destroy them, and it's going to destroy their families. People make mistakes, and they are remorseful of it. They change during time. They mature during time, and they need to look at these things. They need to look at it. So right now, your husband is still in solitary confinement, and he's been in there for how long now?
6 months.
6 months. So you've been seeing him through glass?
Through glass, yes. Through, you know, hearing from him by letters. So, yeah.
How are the kids holding out?
They're holding up. You know, they miss their father. They miss the contact with them. But, you know, they have faith that all this would be over soon. You know,
the sad thing is they're at that tender age, you know, where they really need the father. They need their father with them. They need the father involvement. And they're at that age now where they are seeing for themselves what they have to go through. Not only in the prisons, but in the communities. It's sad.
Very true.
It's sad. So what support are you getting right now? What help is out there for you?
To be honest with you, the support I have are through friends, through, you know, the networks that you connected me with, and just my husband, you know. That's basically it right now. I've been writing to the ACLU. I've been writing to Governor Newsom. I've been writing to the ombudsman, to the warden, just, you know, different people trying to get heard, but it just seems that right now it's just falling on deaf ears.
Have you contacted the governor? Is it Governor Brown still there, or is there a new governor?
No, it's Governor Gavin Newsom.
Newsom.
I have, yes, I've emailed him, I've written to him, I have called, but I haven't received any response yet. So, but that doesn't mean I'm going to stop there. If I have to do it every day, you know, I will, and I am going to, you know, someone's going to read my husband's story, and hopefully they'll do something about it, you know.
Usually after these shows, when I interview people, I actually, and you can go on Messenger and just type in CNN News or type in any of these media outlets, and I actually copy and paste the video in there so that they get a chance to listen to it. And if we continue to do that, maybe they will be able to start doing more than they're doing about these issues on these media outlets. And again, I ask that the audience do the same thing. Contact these media outlets. Let them, even if they copy and paste the videos in there, if they contact them by writing or making phone calls. But again, the more we press for media attention, the more we may get success with that. And we need to have them hear your story. We need to have them have you on the shows as guest speakers as well, so you can tell your story, they can hear it. And the governor's offices, I notice a lot of times prisoners are discouraged, because when they contact the governor's office about things that are happening to them, the letters that they send get sent right back to the prison where the people that are being complained about are the ones that are getting the letters back. So we need more than that. Gracie, we have 90 seconds left for you to finish, and we're going to have you back on next Monday, the same time, and that would be the 13th.
Okay, that sounds good.
And if there's any issues with that timing, you can let me know. We can push the time up. So would you like to say something just to end this, to let them know how they can contact you if they need more information?
Sure. Yeah, I'm going to give you a cell phone number. Please feel free to call or text. So if you would like to reach out, it's area code 213-713-6990. That's 213-713-6990.
Great. And I hope that everyone will be able to listen to this video, to listen to this interview, and to be able to do such. Contact the governor's office, contact the media, contact ACLU, any prisoner organization that you know of that can help Gracie's husband and others who are serving solitary confinement in the penal system. Gracie, I thank you so much for having you on with us. And I'm sorry, they've been doing a lot of work here. There's a lot of sounding going on, so I'm hoping that it doesn't affect the station, but at the same time, we'll see you next week, and thank you so, so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you.